is a download from Triple J.
For more music, current affairs, comedy and culture, triplej.net.au.
And now...
2008.
And there you have it, the opening track to the brand new album from Death Cab for Cutie, which is released this month. The new album from Death Cab for Cutie is called Narrow Stairs, and that one is Bixby Canyon Bridge. Now, this is the seventh studio album for the Washington Band, if you count their very first independent cassette release, which came out in 1997. Their last release was 3 years ago. The album Plans was the biggest for the band so far. It went gold in the States, and it also earned them a Grammy nomination. Now, Ben Gibbard is the singer with the American Band. I actually caught up with him recently just before the band hit the stage at the Fillmore in San Francisco. He was backstage chilling out before going on stage. I spoke to him at length about the band's career and also his aims and ambitions with this new album. But we started off by talking about Jack Kerouac, because recently Ben Gibbard took part in a documentary about the fantastic Beat Generation writer from the 50s and 60s. And the documentary was largely based around the book which Kerouac wrote called Big Sur. He spent some time in a cabin on the Californian coastline, and he put out a book written and inspired by the wonderful coastline around Big Sur itself. Now, because he took part in the documentary, Ben Gibbard was also lucky enough to spend time in the cabin where Kerouac wrote the book. And there, Ben Gibbard was alone and finished off the songs for this album.
It's in a canyon. The original cabin was just a one-bedroom cabin without any real amenities. But since, you know, the 50s when it was, I'm assuming, built, you know, it's been built on to by the people who've owned it. You know, I made a point to kind of stay in that wing of the cabin, you know.
Did you feel his presence at all? Did anything sort of come through you that gave you the spirit of what Kerouac felt?
Not necessarily. I mean, you know, I feel like the first song on the record, Bixby Canyon Bridge, is kind of related to the lack of the spirit that, you know, that I kind of found there. But I think in not finding anything, I kind of found the answers I was looking for, you know, I feel that, you know, as, you know, directly related to the text of Big Sur, I think that Kerouac was looking for something there that he necessarily didn't find, or if he did find it, he corrupted it himself by, you know, bringing the city into this, you know, beautiful place that he had kind of tried to kind of, you know, idealize and make into his salvation.
So after a couple of weeks yourself spending there, what did you find out about yourself and especially the songwriting that went into this album?
I guess I kind of found that I'm not a big fan of complete isolation, you know. Like, I mean, I'm a very social person, and I kind of need that contact. Creatively, I need people around me, you know, more than I do, you know, need to be alone by myself. You know, I've never been the kind of person who's had a hard time buckling down and concentrating. So, you know, the trip wasn't necessarily to focus, you know, because I wasn't focusing at home. It was more just to try to do something interesting to kind of color the writing process a little bit.
But just before we get off the subject of Kerouac as well, he's got a very distinct, or he had a very distinct style of writing. Not everyone kind of likes the way he used to write, but did you actually experiment with trying to write lyrics or trying to come up with some sort of lyrical flow that imitated what he did?
I think probably when I was younger and was, you know, really into the beat writers, you know, I think I might have tried to emulate that kind of style back then, but it never felt, you know, It didn't come naturally to me because it was, you know, it was pretty anachronistic to try to write in that manner anyways, you know. So I've just more really taken the, you know, the kind of the lionization of the ordinary that Kerouac, you know, was specifically so good at. And but also were writers like Raymond Carver and Chekhov and people like that, and people who just kind of, you know, took the kind of mundane elements of life and kind of, and magnified them and showed how interesting, you know, everyday people are and everyday scenarios are.
It still sounds like a fairly personal record to me. I want to hit upon a couple of songs. Let's start with the single "I Will Possess Your Heart," which is one of the best songs I've written. I reckon you guys have done. And you hear it, and the initial listening, you go, "Ah, yeah, kind of love song. It's nice. It's, you know, it's got a pleasant feel to it. It's really beautiful vocals again, and all that sort of stuff." And then you hear it a few times, and you go, "Hang on a second. I think this is a touch creepy, this song."
Yeah, I think that everybody is. I've been on one side or the other of that song, you know, in their lives. It's like, and I think that it's, you know, I think from the obsessive side, you know, I think that what makes people, what turns, you know, obsession into, you know, something, you know, far more creepy is just that the people who are obsessive don't know that don't understand that they're crossing any boundaries with anybody. There's a level of obsession that that people don't understand is not appropriate, and their intentions may be pure, but the way they're going about, you know, trying to kind of convince this other person that they're made for each other is, you know, is very many times can cross some boundaries. And I would hope that the song comes across not so much in that I wanted to write a song that was creepy, but just that I wanted to write a song that was trying to shed a certain level of sympathy upon the person who is obsessing over another. That, you know, there is definitely in the song there is a hint of potential malice there, but I don't think that it wasn't meant to be the kind of song that was, you know, written to kind of, you know, be a preface to something awful happening. You know, it's just that, you know, and in the bridge, you know, saying that, you know, I won't let you let me down so easily. I mean, that's an incredibly, you know, creepy thing to say, but I don't think that the narrator in the song thinks that that's an inappropriate thing to say, but it completely is, and that's what makes it, you know, so that's, you know, where that line where obsession kind of crosses into somewhere very inappropriate.
On Triple J, I'm speaking to Ben from Death Cab for Cutie about some of the material off the new album Narrow Stairs. Another track, Ben, is No Sunlight, which is another highlight for me. The line that stood out in this track is, "The optimist died in me." Once again, is this an autobiographical song?
I see the song as much about being just about reaching a point in one's life where, you know, you've moved along in your life down a certain path, and it's led you to a place where, you know, the sky isn't as open and vast as it once was for you, and I don't think that's necessarily something that's overly depressing as much as it is just a reality of growing older. And, you know, I feel that it's rather universal that it's harder to remain optimistic as one gets older, and to kind of keep one's optimism as free flying as it once was when one was a teenager or something like that. But I also think that I like the fact that, you know, the music juxtaposes the lyrics to such an extent, and that the song is such a, you know, upbeat kind of, you know, rock tune, and the lyrics are, you know, about the optimist dying inside of somebody, and there's a certain level of gallows humor for me about that, you know.
Yeah, well, I do get that feeling with other material off the record as well. There's a lot of highlights here for me. You Can Do Better Than Me is another, you know, great track, which is only a short track, but it's beautiful while it lasts. And also Long Division is a good, strong track. But we're going to get cut off in just a moment. I just want to sort of leave by talking about the future and how optimistic you are with this record and what you've done.
I'm as much interested in seeing just kind of, you know, where we kind of end up. I'm not so much concerned with trying to, you know, meet the same sales figures that we met with Plans, you know, but I am interested in kind of seeing, you know, who stays along for the ride, you know, because it's with Plans, we were kind of privy to a lot of things that we never really had available to us before, whether it was radio play or being able to kind of spend so much time internationally. And I think for us now, I think what we're really excited about is just seeing where everything kind of levels out. You know, we had a really massive push on the last record, and it seems like it's going to be the same way this way, but for us, I just want the record to be received well by people who like the band, and hopefully we'll be able to kind of, you know, continue to please the people who've liked the band in the past and maybe make some new fans along the way.
More of the music, the new music there on Triple J from Death Cab for Cutie. That one, No Sunlight, from the new album, Narrow Stairs, which is officially released, when is it? I think it's this weekend it came out. And Ben Gibbard, the singer from Death Cab for Cutie, was in conversation with me this evening on Triple J. If you're a major fan of Death Cab for Cutie, you know they've been to Australia before. Well, do you think they're going to come back with this new album? I would suggest, now this may be related or maybe unrelated, but if you are a fan of Death Cab for Cutie, maybe you should listen to Robbie Merrick and the Doctor this coming Wednesday morning, okay? Sometime between 6 and 9, they might have some sort of an announcement to make. What that could be is anyone's guess.
2008.
New releases every Sunday evening.
Triple J.